It is Thursday, March 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a U.S. Senate committee hears allegations about Russia's possible involvement in U.S. domestic affairs. Turkey announces the end of its military involvement in northern Syria, and we get the latest on Australian rapper Iggy Azalea. It's all ahead. The Senate Intelligence Committee focused Thursday on Russia's efforts to shape news surrounding the 2016 election as it held a hearing into Russian meddling in the U.S. presidential campaign. I spoke to VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson and asked her about reports of Russian interference in U.S. politics.
The committee, as they met this morning, found that Russian interference continued through U.S. primary season for both the Democratic and Republican candidates, through to the general election. And what we learned today is that Russian interference didn't stop with the election. It continued up until this week when House Speaker Paul Ryan was immersed in that healthcare battle with his own party. And the hearing found that Russian efforts to undermine and drive a wedge between Republicans continued even then.
What is seen as the goals of this alleged campaign by Russia?
Well, there are multiple goals. Some of it during the U.S. primary season was to undermine candidates who were perceived as not being friendly to Russian interests. One of the more interesting moments of today's testimony came from an academic who pointed to Senator Marco Rubio, who sits on the Intelligence Committee and who, of course, ran as a Republican presidential candidate last year, and said that Russian efforts had directly targeted his campaign because he was perceived as not being friendly to them, and actually had a measurable difference on his campaign.
In this season of politics, there's a certain partisan element going on here because the Congress at the moment, both houses of Congress are controlled by the Republican Party. Do Democrats feel they're getting enough of an ability to make their concerns known?
I think particularly over on the Senate side, Senators Warren and Burr are known as working together quite well, and they've both expressed, both yesterday and today during the hearing, that they want to work together in as bipartisan a manner as possible because of the grave importance of these hearings and what they're seeking to investigate. So they've both reiterated again and again that they want to work together, not politicize this process, and just take a very straight-up investigatory approach to these hearings.
Because there have been some partisan tensions, though, on the House side in the Intelligence Committee there.
That's right. We have had quite the interesting week over on the House side in terms of the Russia investigation. I was just over at the office of House Intel Chairman Devin Nunes, who, of course, is meeting as we speak with his colleague, Ranking Member Adam Schiff, after a week of back and forth between Republicans and Democrats about where this House intelligence investigation goes next. I mean, we've been, for all intents and purposes, stalled over here on this. And I think the Senate investigation wants to emphasize that they're not going to go down that road of partisan politics, that they want to keep this a very serious, methodical process. So we'll have to see how all of that shakes out, and particularly if the two sides here on the House can get back together.
Well, in addition, though, Washington is not the only target, I guess you could say in this regard, by Moscow, because there's apparently a great deal of interest in Russia in elections in Europe, particularly in France.
Absolutely. Committee Chair Burr actually emphasized that in his opening statements today. He said that he was very interested in Russian efforts to undermine elections in Germany and France. And we actually heard from House Speaker Paul Ryan as well this morning, who said that he continues to be concerned about that issue as well. So that's certainly something the Capitol Hill will continue to take a look at as we continue this Russia investigation.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Catherine.
You're so welcome.
That's VOA Congressional congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, this story is continuing to trend on social media as we see different people testify in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And there's a gentleman by the name of Clinton Watts who is trending all throughout the morning. He's with the George Washington University Center for Cyber and Homeland Security. And he gave a very stark picture about how social media are being used to try to shift and influence people, using terms like weaponization of information, talking extensively about how Russia is doing this. And so he's been trending on social media as people are reacting to this. And for many people, it seems like this is the first kind of clear look at what some of these tactics are as he describes them. And it's really eye-opening for a lot of people as they discuss what he's testifying about. So I have no doubt that we'll continue to see more people trending as they come in and more people surprised and shocked on social media about some of the things that they're hearing that are going on behind the scenes in the digital space that they have no idea about.
Mm.
Another big story trending is, of course, the political angle of President Trump and House Speaker Paul Ryan. They're fighting against the Freedom Caucus, the conservative Republicans who helped to sink their health care bill. Donald Trump tweeting out today that the Freedom Caucus will hurt the entire Republican agenda if they don't get on the team and fast. We must fight them and Dems in 2018. And then Speaker Paul Ryan doubling down on that, saying that Trump will work with Democrats if Republicans don't get on board, and that Ryan doesn't want to work with Democrats. When asked point blank, he said, no, I don't want to work with them. Now, that was something that caused a lot of stir on social media, people saying, aren't these two parties supposed to be working together and getting along? And one person declaring rather starkly that bipartisanship is dead. The flip side of that, however, is others saying, good, we shouldn't be working with the Democrats. We're going to stand up for what we believe in, and we have Paul Ryan to do that. So you continue to see that political back and forth that we've seen since the dawn of social media, and even before then, and I'm sure
before.
It's well before then, and it's going to continue, but especially on social media, the back and forth and the partisanship is only going to continue, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is too bad. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The U.S. State Department fires six people at the embassy in Afghanistan for drug violations. Venezuela's High Court takes control of the legislature. As we heard, President Trump issues a rallying cry against the conservative House Freedom Caucus, and North Carolina lawmakers vote on a compromise bill to repeal the so-called bathroom bill. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Here's an idea for a new kind of building that is out of this world, way out of this world. An architecture firm called Clouds AO has an idea to build a skyscraper that is actually more like a ground scraper. Called the Analemma Tower, their idea calls for snagging a large asteroid, putting it into orbit, and then using the space rock to tether and anchor the giant building with a high-strength cable. That's right, it's a building dangled from outer space. So if you think this sounds crazy, maybe it is. But remember that Clouds AO is the same company that has already won a NASA competition to design living quarters on Mars. For the Analemma Tower, occupants would be able to enter and exit the building at various surface transfer points located on high hills and mountains here on Earth along the tower's orbital path. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at relations between Australia and China. Wednesday, Turkey announced the end of its military operations in northern Syria to clear the area of Islamic State and Kurdish fighters. Since launching Operation Euphrates Shield last August, Turkish-backed fighters of the Free Syrian Army cleared several towns and about 100 kilometers of border area of IS insurgents. Turkish troops are still stationed in secured areas where Ankara also hopes to keep Kurdish units from linking up to create a self-governing territory. Turkish officials said the operation was a success and did not rule out further incursions, having indicated interest in participating in an offensive to retake the IS-held city of Raqqa. University of Denver International Affairs professor Jonathan Adelman tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, the Turkish announcement comes just 2 weeks before Turkey holds a constitutional referendum, granting President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sweeping new powers.
First of all, there is a certain degree of dubious sentiment that they really are ending it. In other words, we think there's a good chance, and I would agree with that, that the Turks are saying they're ending active operations right now, but they're going to keep their soldiers right where they are. I think, secondly, what really matters in Turkey right now is the feeling that Erdogan wants to win the upcoming election. And this could be, and probably is tied to that, to say, you see, I won, it's all over, no more Turks are dying. And thirdly, it also helps to take attention away from the fact that thousands of terrorists went through Turkey on their way into Syria, because Erdogan has failed in his basic effort, which was to destroy the Bashar al-Assad government. So he's gotten some modest victories here.
There was some concern at one point not too long ago that Turkish forces and Turkish-backed rebels were going to confront Syrian government troops and U.S.-backed Kurdish rebels around the area of Raqqa. That obviously has eased somewhat, but Turkey has expressed interest in taking part in an operation to liberate Raqqa.
And this is a major problem for the United States, because the American position makes a good deal more sense. I mean, the American position is that the Kurds deserve, if not their own homeland, something that looks a little bit like that. And there's 17 million of them in Turkey alone. Up against that, and up against the fact that the countries like Russia don't have the level of animosity towards the Kurds that the Turks do, and understand that they've been the best fighting force. And then if you look across the border and you look at Kurdistan and Iraq, you see a zone where the level of average income is probably somewhere between 10 and 50 times greater than it is, I was reading, in Baghdad. From a Western point of view, the Kurds are more pro-Western, more pro-American, are more willing to have some form of capitalism. And so we don't support, basically, as a government, whether it was Obama or whether it is Trump, the notion that they need to be destroyed. We think they have rights, and those rights are in our particular interest.
Jonathan Adelman of the University of Denver. The announcement came one day before U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met with Mr. Erdogan and other Turkish officials in Ankara. Bilateral relations have been tested by continued U.S. support of Kurdish YPG units fighting in Syria and Turkish demands for the extradition of exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, who's accused of orchestrating last July's failed coup. Australia is hoping to eventually ratify an extradition treaty with China after abandoning plans this week for Parliament to approve the controversial measure. Critics have insisted that China's judicial system is fraught with human rights abuses. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The centre-right government abruptly withdrew plans to ratify an extradition treaty with Beijing when ministers realised it was facing defeat in Parliament. There was dissent from the opposition Labour Party and also within government ranks by MPs worried about the lack of safeguards within the agreement to offer protection to Australians deported to China. Their concerns have echoed those of the Law Council of Australia, which said China didn't act in accordance with procedural fairness and rule of law standards in criminal proceedings. Matt Thistlethwaite, a Labour MP, says the agreement goes against key Australian principles.
Australia values democracy. We value freedom of speech. We value the right to a fair trial. We value the presumption of innocence. And we don't like the censorship of people's comments in the media.
The government insists the accord would be an important part in Canberra's law enforcement relationship with China, which is Australia's biggest trading partner. But despite opposition in Parliament, Australian Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says she'll continue to negotiate with MPs to ensure the extradition treaty is brought into force.
The whole idea of foreign policy is to engage with other countries on the basis of trust. And we signed an agreement with China, and there would be an expectation that having signed a treaty, we would ratify it. So that's what I'm seeking to do now, to find a way that we can honour the agreement that we made.
Australia has extradition treaties with about 40 other countries. Experts say Australia's decision to delay ratifying the extradition treaty wouldn't go down well in Beijing, but that China's displeasure would not inflict lasting damage on broader bilateral relations. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Well, Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, joins me now with news of the latest release by a singer from Down Under.
The subject today is an Australian singer whose name is Iggy Azalea. Yeah. Now, she is back. She's been away from the scene for a couple of years. In fact, she's got a new album that was supposed to come out last June called Digital Distortion, but she was involved in a very public and very ugly breakup with her then-fiancé, who plays basketball for a professional basketball team in California. He was caught cheating, and it just became an ugly whole scene. So she went into the underground world and disappeared for a while, got her affairs in order, and now she's ready to come back. So she's got a new song, and we're going to check it out today. Here's Iggy Azalea and Mo Bounce.
Mo Bounce, 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 bounce.
How did she get that name? It's kind of an interesting name.
Well, that's a great question that you ask. Well, one of her favorite pets combined with the street that she grew up on in Australia, you put them together and she came up with Iggy Azalea. The street name was Azalea, and Iggy was the dog. Her real name is Amethyst Amelia Kelly. Now, there's nothing wrong with Amethyst, but she decided to go with Iggy Azalea. And she's known for her gyrations and her urban style and urban sound. She's kind of carved a niche in the urban format of music. The new video for the new song Mo Bounce was filmed on the streets of Hong Kong, a place that I lived for about 5 years. And so, you know, it's kind of cool watching her go up and down the street singing and dancing. She even does a little twerking. And she's been on songs with Ariana Grande and several other artists over the years. But now she's coming back, and she does promise her fans that this year is the year that the album Digital Distortion will finally come out. And so that, with her new single, Mo Bounce, Iggy is back.
Okay, well, best of luck to Iggy Azalea. Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Bounce like a f***ing 6'4", 6 flow, slick talk, spitting that Crisco, drop that like a cholo at the dub show. Then you hit the switch and pick it up and let the world know. Homie, if you broke, oh, no, you don't deserve. So this fake bowler's only getting on my nerves, though. I just cracked the 40 now, sipping out the straw slow. Little bit of ratchet, little bougie, you should all know. Everybody got opinions, yeah, like...
And that is the music of Iggy Azalea. Well, unfortunately, we have some sad news for you about a longtime VOA newscaster that many of you have heard over the years. Dave DeForest died early today at a hospital in the Washington, D.C. area following a sudden illness. He was surrounded by family members. Dave was a steady and authoritative on-air presence in radio news. He'll be missed by many people, including those in the audience. Dave, may you rest in peace, and condolences to your family. That is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In his address to the recent Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson delineated the coalition's military successes against the Islamic State, including killing tens of thousands of ISIS fighters and liberating 62% of ISIS-occupied land in Iraq and 30% in Syria. He praised the efforts of coalition partners on the ground, including Turkish forces, for pushing ISIS off the Turkey-Syria border, the Libyan government-aligned fighters for routing ISIS in Sirte, the Iraqi security forces, who, with the cooperation of the Kurdish Peshmerga, are retaking the key ISIS stronghold of Mosul. He spoke of the courage of Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi, noting the commitment he has shown to ensure that people are cared for after the battles, and hailing the unprecedented cooperation between the central government in Baghdad and the Kurdistan regional government as a key reason for the progress seen against ISIS. Soon, Secretary Tillerson noted, the coalition's efforts will enter a new phase, defined by transition from major military operations to stabilization. In this transition, the coalition will continue to clear landmines and return water and electricity, the basic elements that permit people to return to their homes. He added that the coalition will pursue regional diplomatic solutions for the underlying political and sectarian disputes that helped ISIS to flourish, and will continue to provide humanitarian assistance to effective communities as necessary. Secretary Tillerson noted that a successful stabilization phase will set the stage for a successful normalization phase, where local leaders and local governments will take on the process of restoring their communities with our support. The development of a rejuvenated civil society in these places will lead to the emergence of stability and peace where there once was chaos and suffering. But, Mr. Tillerson warned, none of this will happen automatically. He asked each country in the coalition to examine how it can best support these vital stabilization efforts and deal the final blow to ISIS. Finally, Mr. Tillerson emphasized that to stay ahead of a global outbreak of ISIS-related terrorism, the coalition will have to combat the terrorists' perverse ideological message, persist with in-country counterterrorism and law enforcement operations, share intelligence among nations, and break ISIS's ability to spread its message and recruit new followers online. Most of all, said Secretary of State Tillerson, now is the time to strengthen our shared commitment to security and invest in a fight in which we all have a stake.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.